about to get started. Sit back, enjoy the show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
This is Tim and Sid for Tuesday, September 22nd. It is the... It's the first day of fall. Now, you could look at that and say, darn it all. Or use more, perhaps stronger language to describe the feeling of the first day of fall. Or you could look at it this way. We are one day closer to the end of 2020.
2020, you suck.
Let's go.
Let's get to 2021. We got to cancel stuff.
Feel like an instant match game. The only thing worse than 2020 is blank.
The answer is, it's a quick match game. The answer is nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Careful. I am a Libra, so I balance in between the optimist and the pessimist. And the pessimist says, watch out. I'm Tim McAuliffe. He's Sid Sixero. We're live on TV and radio. Two massive games in Sportsnet tonight. Sid and I are on the mains until 6 p.m. Eastern. That's when our coverage of the Jays and Yankees begins with Blue Jay Central. You can catch the rest of our show on Sportsnet 360. Dan Shulman, who will call tonight's action between the Blue Jays and the Yankees, will join us in about 20 minutes' time.
Also, Timmy, Game 3 of the NBA's Western Conference Final can be seen on Sportsnet 1 this evening. Lakers up 2-0. Coverage begins at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Night off in the Stanley Cup Final. Doesn't mean we won't talk hockey. Harnarayan Singh of Hockey Night in Punjabi will join us as well. We'll talk Dallas and Tampa series tied up at 1. We'll also talk about his new book, which is out today. Ken Reed's new book, Tim, I'm told, is also out today. We're not going to talk about his. We're going to talk about Harnarayan's.
Oh, snap.
Plus, week two. I'll tell you off air. Week two in the National Football League is in the books. Raiders won in Vegas last night. Former NFL MVP, former Raider, Rich Gannon, will be joining us next hour. Busy show. Let's get right to it, Timmy, with the Blue Jays. Baseball's postseason, by the way, begins exactly 1 week from today, and things with this Toronto team are getting, how do you say, interesting.
Ken Reed, send your text to Jeff Azzopardi, who books the show. It's the other Maltese bald guy that you need to take
it's
up.
Two straight days of promoing Ken's book, whose name I can't remember. I think that's pretty damn good. That's
one
free
to
advertising
remember.
For Ken.
One to Remember is the name of the book. I looked it up.
Scores. Bucks and D.
Time for the Lead, brought to you by the new season of Family Feud Canada on CBC and CBC Gem. That's got to be the next book, Pucks in Deep, right? I don't know what
I'm
it's
surprised
about.
It wasn't this book. No, I'm with you. That's a book I'd be in on, definitely.
Toronto Blue Jays baseball. After getting beat down in the Bronx last week, the Jays turned the tables on the Yankees last night with an 11-5 win at Salem Field. Now, it's hard to overshadow a big win over a rival like the Yankees. But then again, Alejandro Kirk is 5'8", 265 pounds. So if anything is going to overshadow what you saw in the win column last night, it was the 21-year-old rookie who had never played above A-ball until this year, going 4-for-4 with his first major league home run, much to the delight of the Jays dugout and the fans watching at home. Did he indeed overshadow the win, and how much fun was that to watch last night?
Nothing else matters.
What?
Not the playoff run. Not Teoscar extending a 15-game Salem Field hitting streak. Not Vladdy having 3 extra base hits. Nothing. Tim, do you know what Alejandro Kirk was doing 1 year ago today?
No.
I have no idea either. He was in Class A. I can't even get the game logs from Dunedin. I went to baseball ref. I have no idea exactly.
Class A would have been over.
Class A would have been over. Nothing. Yeah. I can't get any information past the last 4 months on this 21-year-old phenom, who, by the way, technically, before Travis Shaw had to back out due to injury tonight, was batting ahead of Travis Shaw in the lineup this evening, 8th over Travis Shaw's 9th. Look, I don't know where the story's going. I don't know where this kid came from. It's like Superman flying in from another planet, landing in a cornfield. I don't know what Alejandro Kirk is all about, but I'm here for it. And you know what? That four-hit performance yesterday, Timmy, with a home run, you know what that would have sounded like at Rogers Center. You know what the fans would have been doing at Rogers Center. So, Timmy, if you want to hit me with a horn, I would like to give Alejandro Kirk the standing ovation that he deserves. Alejandro Kirk. Where did he come from? No idea. No clue. But he better not ever leave. And Tim, is he now, like what conversations do we have? Forgive me as I awkwardly sit down. What conversations do we have now about Alejandro Kirk with the playoffs a week away? Is he your number one catcher? He's going again tonight. Is he the guy? Is Danny Jansen not your number one guy anymore? Does he start game one with Hyunjin Ryu against probably Tampa? I don't know. These are just questions I'm throwing out there, Tim. I'm on the train for Alejandro Kirk. I'm here. I'm here for it.
You mentioned, think about this. Before the start of the year, the Jays cut their magic number to 3. Vladdy goes 3 for 3 with 3 extra base hits and 3 RBIs. And all you're talking about is Alejandro Kirk. Do we have a new leader of the Jays bandwagon? And you asked where he came from. And fittingly, it is Tijuana, Mexico, where Alejandro Kirk comes from. But
That I knew. I just meant from a baseball sense.
No,
like
I know.
From the sky. Like that. That's what I was talking about.
Do we have a new leader of the bandwagon? Is he the new conductor of Locomotive Kirk?
Oh, it's Alejandro Kirk. He's driving the bandwagon, baby. With Geddy Lee, Big Glove Guy, BJ Birdie. It's not BJ Birdie anymore, is it? Blue Jay Nona and the drummer dude out on Bremner.
No. They fittingly changed the name of the mascot from BJ to Ace. I think one of the good choices in Toronto Blue Jays history is to rename the mascot from BJ to Ace. Kirk becomes the first catcher 21 or younger with at least 4 hits, including 2 for extra bases. Now, I know we added a caveat that makes it even more interesting. Fitting, Johnny Bench, last guy in 1969, first catcher 21 or younger with at least 4 hits, including 2 for extra bases, since Johnny Bench in 1969.
Are we pulling Johnny Bench now in terms of the Alejandro Kirk discussion? There are things happening.
Get on the bus, Gus. Let's go.
2020 has been that kind of year where we're seeing weird things every day.
Yeah.
To see an Alejandro Kirk-Johnny Bench comparison is not something I thought I would get on this show today. But
no.
That, Tim, is exactly what you gave me. And once again, I am here for it. But, Tim, let's not stop there. You ran through a Johnny Bench statistic. We just saw the bandwagon get a new driver. And it's Alejandro Kirk driving the bandwagon as the Jays, with the magic number of 3, any combination of wins and Jays wins and Seattle losses that equal 3, they're in. They're on their way to the postseason. Kirk is driving the bus, but that's not all. He's hitting dingers. And a famous little leaguer, look at this, he's back. How many laps is Alejandro Kirk going to have here?
Yeah.
We do have a live show. I don't want to be that guy. Congratulations on your 4-hit night. Congratulations on your 4-hit night. But we got to, thanks, Alejandro. Alejandro. Also, he's hitting dingers. And the last guy.
Sorry.
Named Big
Alejandro's hitting dingers?
Alejandro's hitting dingers. You know where I'm going with this, Tim.
Nah.
That means, as we go back in the history of great Little League interviews of years gone by, that means a member of the Jays, who is technically Big Al, is hitting dingers. 3, 2, 1.
They call me Big Al, and I hit dingers.
Anytime we can get Alfred D'Elia into the show, I am down for that.
And I like chocolate. I hit dingers, and I like chocolate so much.
Guys, if we can confirm that we have the video of the one that Alejandro Kirk hit off the wall and the reaction that it drew from the Jays bench, because if you think we're bigging this up a little too much, We've talked about our crew of Dan and Buck enough, but that whole crew, Doug Walton, Troy, Clara, who's an absolute beauty, had an isolation camera on the dugout when Kirk hit it off the top of the wall and it looked like it might be his first major league home run. And the reaction from the dugout was one, like, you could tell the guys were just cheering for it to get out. And Bo Bichette thought it was gone. Like, there's the whole crew is just cheering for him, and it's great to see. And you're right. It like, I don't know what's happened to Danny Jansen's bat, because he was the guy that was going to be able to do this at this level. But and he's got a good Jansen's got a good thing going with Hyunjin Ryu. So you're not taking that away from Ryu at this point. But I wouldn't be surprised if, like, Andrew Stoughton wrote in The Athletic today, not just should he be on the playoff roster, should he start for the Toronto Blue Jays? Like, that's where we're at now.
I'll hear it.
Yeah.
I will hear it.
Yeah.
Look, this is lightning in a bottle stuff for the rest of this campaign, because this is uncharted territory for everybody.
Everybody.
So why not run the hot hand?
Right.
I mean, we've seen it enough in other sports. Do it. And it's not near the craziest thing I've heard in 2020.
Right.
Not
I should just to remind me, Sid, I should never pantomime rolling the dice on TV. It's probably not.
I had the screen down. Could you just reenact it again for me here?
No, don't do that.
BJ
Shoemaker, Matt Shoemaker gets the stuff. I'm just gonna move on from a bunch of things today. Shoemaker goes three innings, allows three hits, making a bid for the threes are wild today, making a bid
threes
for the
wild,
third
yes.
spot in the playoff rotation. I think the Jays want him to be that. We'll talk to Dan Shulman about that, because the magic number is also three. And I think tonight will be a little tougher. Gerrit Cole versus Tanner Roark, going for the first time since giving up four home runs to these very same Yankees that he will see. Again, Sportsnet Mains will have Blue Jay Central at 6 p.m. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It'll take over at 6:30 when the game starts. So we've got you covered each and every way on the Toronto Blue Jays as they take on the Yankees tonight.
Before we move on to hockey, Tanner Roark, I'm not confident, but hoping for the best. Let's talk a little hockey here, Timmy. Steven Stamkos did not play in Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final last night. Didn't matter in the end. Close game, though. Lightning beat the Stars 3-2, even up the Cup Final 1 apiece. This reeks of at least six. Tampa jumped out to a 3-0 first period lead, hung on to win. Tim, in your humble opinion, humble,
okay,
what was the key for the Tampa Bay Lightning last night on Sportsnet in the CBC?
I'm not so sure. I got to recollect. I'm going to go back maybe a day. I think I need to go back one full day to answer this question. Just yesterday, before the game, here was my answer to what the key would be for the Tampa Bay Lightning in 3-2-1. Because to me, the power play gets going and it's over.
Out to the top to Hedman. Other side, Kucherov to Point, shoot, scores! After an 0-for-15, a power play goal, and that changes the complexion of the game for Tampa.
This power play looks confident again, doesn't it? Hedman, Palat. Hedman fakes the shot, Kucherov, a hard pass, Palat shoots, scores! Two power play goals and a 2-0 lead.
And that was yesterday, before the show.
Before the show.
Lightning 2-for-4 in the power play after the 0-for-15 drought, I guess it ended up being, at Stamkos. Look at. All right, so it's not over. It's not over, but that's a start. And it was what it needed to be in the playoffs. It was your best players being your best players when you need it the most. Special players make special plays on special days. And last night, that was Nikita Kucherov. Primary assist on both power play goals. Ken Reed said on Sportsnet Central that he wanted to date the one from Palat, and I get it. I'm more in love with the perseverance it took him to get there. Like, Kucherov had to shake off a bunch early in that game, because it is obvious that the Stars are targeting the talent of the Bolts. And that's not a new thing for Tampa. or any skilled team. In fact, it might sound really familiar to Canadian teams with their high-end talent. Like, I'm really interested in how the game is being called in the postseason, and I'm pretty sure there's a bunch of Canadian teams and a bunch of Canadian fans of Canadian teams that are wondering the exact same thing. And they're wondering if they're built to withstand this. Like, I think Tampa, healthy, has the best high-end talent in the league, and Julien Brisebois made a concerted effort to get tougher. All skill is being targeted. You better make your skill tough or big or tough and big. Like, let's face it, Kucherov has had to learn this, too. Last year, he was getting beat up in the Columbus series, and he got upset, and he responded, and he missed a game because of a suspension that he incurred in game two of a 5-1 game. He lost his mind a little bit, took a run at somebody, and the juxtaposition, the difference between that Kucherov and the Kucherov you saw last night, I think was huge and a big part of why Tampa is where it is right now.
Just to double back before I comment on what you just said, Timmy, when Ken Reed says I wanted to date that pass, what specifically is he talking about? What is he saying specifically?
I think he likes the pass so much that he would call the pass up and ask it out on a date. And I do believe the pass would, in fact, pass.
just like high school all over again, Kenny. Join the club.
Have you seen Ken Reed's pictures from high school?
Oh,
they make Sid Sixero look like a stud.
Not everything can be BJ Birdie, let me tell you. in terms of what else you were saying about Kucherov, it made me sick. It made me sick how little reaction there was from Tampa in terms of what was happening with Kucherov. Was I the only one?
Weren't the refs supposed to do that?
Yeah, but at some point they're not. You know that and I know that.
I know.
At some point in the National Hockey League, the refs will just basically let you get run over regardless of what your stature is. I was amazed. I was amazed to see that. And it wasn't once. It was multiple times with one of the technically best players in the National Hockey League, who I would assume, and you would assume, Tim, you need to win a Stanley Cup. I think we're on the same page there. So that blew me away. I'm very happy you brought it up. Secondly, Tim, Jimmy Benn's taken a lot of heat in his career, right? Now, he has won an Art Ross, lowest point total in a long time to win an Art Ross, but he won an Art Ross 2014.
Right. Still won.
And he makes good money, but he's taken a lot of heat, and some of it from inside his own organization, as we know.
Yep.
But he's been good in this postseason. He's been good, especially in the last 15, 16 games or so. He's been a point-a-game player. He's been good. At $9.5 million, and my intention isn't to piss off Jamie or anyone around him, at $9.5 million a year, those chances he had late, you got to bury him. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's a Stanley Cup final. They pay you to not miss the net. That's ridiculous to me. I'm sorry. Stars should be up 2-0 in this series. Tampa should be done begging for Stamkos to come back, who hasn't played since February 25th. I don't do this often because it's unfair. Mistakes happen. For a guy with his ticket and what he means, that has to be way better. Because I thought the Stars should have won that hockey game last night.
There is a look at his shot where he went blocker side, top shelf, and just missed. And I thought, oh my, that's how close. Like, not only did the Stars withstand the first period, they made it a game, and Ben comes awfully close to tying it up. Like, and I know what you're saying. I
don't like doing that often, Tim. It's not fair to guys. I don't like doing it, but that stuck out to me like a sore thumb because it wasn't one moment. It was a couple of moments with him.
But that's the special players make special plays on special days. Like, that's what you're looking for, your star to snipe that top shelf no matter how hard it is. And I'm understanding how hard it is. The one thing that I will say about all of it last night was all of Tampa's goals came in a span of four shots in less than 4 minutes against Anton Khudobin. And I wondered, like, I thought the slipper fell off. The clock struck midnight, whatever you wanted to say. If you're a Stars fan, you happy with the second and third period? Like, I'm not sure the Bolts looked for another with the same ferocity they did early, or say the third period of game one, but I think I saw enough from Khudobin to say, no, the slipper didn't fall off. Not yet.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. It's this reeks of at least six. Depending on when the prime minister is going to speak tomorrow, we do have a game three scheduled at 8 p.m. Eastern on CBC. Right. We'll get the schedule on that as the day progresses. By the way, Tim, remind me, when we're up on at 6 o'clock on Sportsnet 360 here in the Fan 590, because Blue Jay Central's taken over here on the mains, I want to talk briefly about the NHL awards last night.
Okay, I'll remind you.
It was very interesting to me on numerous levels, so please remind me at 6. I want to get into this a little bit.
We had one more in the NFL. We got Rich Gannon later, and as it always happens in the first block, someone says we should break here soon. Do you want to talk about either Drew Brees and or a 2-0 start for the Raiders before we do Gannon, or can we do it with Gannon?
I think we can do it with Gannon. We got Danny Shulman coming up. We got Hunter Reinisting. We got a busy hour. Let's save it for Rich, and we'll take the break.
I have a reminder about how great quarterbacks just fall off. Remind me to give you the stats that back up how that happens, and we'll discuss whether or not it's happening with Drew Brees.
All right, fair enough. So we got, as both of us just talked about, it's a busy show. We're going to step aside. Huge game for the Jays tonight. Again, Dan Shulman has the call right here on Sportsnet. We will talk to Dan next. This is Tim and Sid live on TV and radio.
They named the thing BJ Birdie.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Tim and Sid. Sid Sixero, Tim McAuliffe in our basements. Still to come, Hunter Reinisting will be joining us. Rich Gannon, former NFL MVP, will be joining us. Timmy, some reaction off that first block, as usual?
We'll get to it in a flash, but game two between the Jays and the Yankees, just an hour away on Sportsnet. Dan Shulman will have the call, as always, alongside Buck Martinez. Dan joins us in a moment as we reflect on last night's game and what Alejandro Kirk did in last night's game. Here's a reminder in 3-2-1.
And the 3-2, and Bo hooks it into left field, a base hit, and Kirk's going to go to third, and he's going to head home, getting away from Louis Rivera, and chugging on home. 1-0 to Vladdy. Down the left field line, and that's going to go to the fence on a bounce. Bichette will come in to score. Guerrero's got his third extra base hit of the night.
Well, that's a welcome sign for sure.
A high fly ball towards the right field corner. Gone! Can you believe it?
Four-hit night for Alejandro Kirk. What a moment. Look at his teammates. There's a big fiesta in Tijuana tonight.
All right, Michael writes in and says, calm down on Alejandro Kirk. We all remember how J.P. Arencibia started his career going 4-for-4 with two home runs. Graham writes in and says, so if Kirk goes 0-for-4 tonight with three strikeouts, hashtag tempered expectations. Listen, he also added the hashtag remember J.P. Arencibia. You can celebrate a guy who came out of near nowhere to make a team and do damage in a big game against the Yankees without placing expectations on him. I love how people think that the media, simply celebrating the idea of coming from nowhere past a ball to hitting your first big league home run, is putting expectations on the guy. You have conversations, you celebrate it. Stop. That's not what this is. You can talk about it. You can introduce the idea. Should he start? Should he get more at-bats? You're not placing expectations. You're just celebrating what happened yesterday, which was a nice moment. Stop trying to ruin it with the remember J.P. Arencibia stuff.
We're not trying to place expectations, all right? But look out, 2021 All-Star Game. Yeah. Dan Shulman will have the call tonight live on Sportsnet. Jays and Yankees, magic number is 3. Dan Shulman joining us right now via the phone. Dan, assuming next year is normal, whatever that means, when will Alejandro Kirk bobblehead night take place at Rogers Center?
I think it'll happen in Dunedin, actually. I think there'll be too much demand to get it to the regular season. It's amazing because people from the second this guy showed up, and I don't mean media, I mean fans, are just like loving this guy. And let's be honest, part of it is he's 21 and he came from A-ball, and part of it is because he's a big fella, right? And you look at him out there and you go, wow, that guy is a professional athlete, and then you see him hit rockets all over the ballpark and you go, this is crazy. So it is fun, and he's back in the lineup tonight, and that's fun, and I agree with you guys. Like, nobody's saying he's going to be Johnny Bench next year or anything like that, but he's fun, and it looks like he can really handle the bat, and they might have a use for him more often than once every 4 or 5 days going forward.
Well, that's what we were talking about in the opening block. Like, I'm not sure what's happened to Danny Jansen's bat, but does this mean what we're seeing? I know it's going to be like a trial and error here, but does this mean we're going to see him play a little bit more given what we saw in the last couple of days?
So here's what we know. He is starting tonight. I don't think he starts tomorrow night. Robbie Ray is going to start tomorrow. I don't think he starts 3 games in a row, but who knows? And Charlie Montoyo said in his pregame Zoom with the media on Thursday, Ryu is going to start, and they like the pairing of Ryu and Jansen. So Jansen will catch Thursday, but with a lefty on the mound for the Yankees, Jordan Montgomery, Kirk's got a chance to DH, because the Blue Jays always wind up having Panic or Shaw, one of their left-handed batters, in there against a lefty. So this could be kind of a blueprint going forward. And by then, we'll have a lot more information. How did he do tonight? How did he do Thursday? That sort of thing. But if you fast forward to the playoffs, say the Jays get the Rays in game one, and it's Blake Snell on the mound, you could see Jansen catching Ryu and Kirk DHing. And then maybe game two, Kirk catches, and you see how it goes. So, you know, they're going to gather as much information as they can in the next few days, but the better he plays, the more he plays.
The other side of the coin, Dan, is, and I know the bar isn't high on Gary Sanchez defensively, but there's elements to what Kirk does that are better than Gary Sanchez, like in terms of blocking balls in the dirt and just the things that you wouldn't expect a 21-year-old to know. Like, that's the other stuff that's kind of stunning me about this story.
Right. Yeah. And again, he's not, you know, Pudge Rodriguez or Tony Pena behind the plate or anything like that, but he looks like he can handle himself. And even if he were 5'8", 190, never mind 5'8", 265, he's 21 and he's never played above A-ball. So the fact that he can handle himself is pretty impressive. And everything we always heard about this guy was, wait till you see him. He's okay. I'm telling you, he can do it. And listen, again, tonight's Garrett Cole, and it could be a whole different situation, and who knows how he hits and who knows how he handles Tanner Roark and whoever comes in after him. Like, this could be a step backwards and then a step forwards. We should expect some peaks and valleys. But again, every night that he goes out there and handles himself well, he's going to get another opportunity, because they just weren't getting as much as they needed out of the catching position. The other thing they could do, and I don't know if they'll do this, but they could in the playoffs, especially in the first round. It's a 3-game series. Do you need 15 pitchers? If you can, and they've got 16 right now, but if you can cut that down to 14 pitchers and have 5 position players, maybe they carry 3 catchers. And maybe, you know, he is DH catcher DH in the 3 games or something like that. And you can pinch run a lot more if you've got 3 catchers on the roster.
I don't know if it's great minds think alike or fools seldom differ, but with you on the line, I like my chances. We were talking about how it's going to be a little bit tougher tonight, Tanner Roark versus Garrett Cole. Listen, I get that Tanner ruffled some fans' feathers with his post-game speech about chewing up innings, and he hasn't gone more than 5, and he gave up 4 bombs in his last outing to the Yankees that he will face tonight. But he can still be a very, very valuable guy to this team, can't he?
When? do you mean in the playoffs this year?
I just mean like this is an arm that they desperately need, and if he can find some sort of consistency, he could play a factor in how this breaks down.
Yeah, well, he signed for another year, right? So he signed for another year, and right now, I don't think he gets a start in the playoffs, but if he pitches well tonight, and let's say he starts Sunday in the last game of the regular season, and let's say the Blue Jays make the playoffs, if he pitches well tonight and then, he's got a chance to be on the roster as a long man. You know, again, like say they're going to carry 14 pitchers, 11 or 12 of them are really obvious, but now you're talking about, you know, has TJ Zoik put himself into the conversation? Has Patrick Murphy put himself into the conversation? Is Anthony Kay going to come back? We don't know. They've got some different ways they can go, but you always like to have a long man or two in case somebody takes a comeback or off the knee in the first inning of a playoff game. So, you know, it might come down to Roark or Anderson. Anderson's in the bullpen right now. Or Stripling. Like, they can't take all of these guys. So, yes, he has not been good. He has not been what they hoped they were going to get. But he still could be a guy who has an impact going forward as much as some of the other guys at kind of the back end of the staff.
Jays Yankees tonight live on Sportsnet. Dan Shulman, Buck Martinez will have the call. Dan has been kind enough to join us. I found a lot of stories kind of got overshadowed last night. Dan, obviously, because Kirk is such a crazy story. Vladdy with the three extra base hits, though. Is there something in his approach that you're seeing a little differently? Because if he starts to cook in the way many expected him to cook, that is the game changer, isn't it?
Yeah, so not to pump the brakes too much, but remember, one was the high fly ball to right center that Hicks lost in the twilight.
Correct.
And it hit Judge in the heel and bounced away, and he got a triple out of it. The second one was a good hard ground ball down the left field line, and the third one was a rocket. So I thought there were some good signs. You know, Buck and I are big on good takes and good foul balls, and that you can kind of see good habits developing, and I thought he had good at-bats. But, you know, we've seen it in spurts before, and I think we have to see more of it before we say, hey, this is a new Vladdy, or this is the Vladdy that everybody expected to see. I don't know about you. Like, every time he comes up, it kind of the little voice inside my head says, it's going to start now. This is it. This is when it's going to happen. Because guys don't do what he did in the minors and then struggle in the majors. But let me say a couple of things. He has been, over his short career, a slightly above-average offensive player in the major leagues. His OPS plus is like 106 or something, meaning his average OPS is like 6% better than the average guy in the majors. And, you know, we talk a lot about how young Alejandro Kirk is. Vladdy's younger. Kirk's older than Vladdy. It's just that Vladdy got here so fast because he's such an enormous talent. I still want to believe that the guy we think is in there is in there. But there were some good signs last night, but I think he needs to string a few games together where you can see the quality of the at-bat and the ball, you know, more line drives, fewer ground balls, all the stuff that we've all talked about for a year or two now. So I think it's in there, but I'm not convinced, like, that he turned a corner or anything last night.
Yeah, it's funny because I often wonder, you know, like, you'll hear players talk about it clicking, but when you have a major leaguer as a dad, that's supposed to be one of the advantages, that it's been explained to you early and it usually clicks early. So I don't know if there's like a click mechanism. From talking to people around the team, like, does Vladdy get major league hitting already?
I think he understands what he's doing. I think he was just so enormously talented in the minors, so much better than everybody else. He hit every mistake and he hit it hard. Yeah. Like, if you look at his numbers, I don't think he ever projected as a 45 or 50 home run guy. I think he was more likely to project as a 330 with 30 home run guys, because he doesn't hit. He is more of a screaming line drive guy than a towering fly ball guy. And that's the way that he was in the minors too. He just hit everything so hard and pitchers made mistakes. And they're better in the majors. They're on the corners more. They're making him chase more at times. And now he's struggling for the first time in his life. Like, even Bo Bichette, John Schneider told me, had a 3-for-45 that great year in Double A when they won the championship. Bo Bichette had like a 3-for-45 stretch. And when he figured it out and came out of it, he went to Schneider and he said, I'm so glad this happened to me now, that I struggled now, because now I know how to deal with it when it happens to me in the major leagues. Vladdy never dealt with it in the minor leagues. He's only dealing with it now. And we've seen some frustration, not like break a bat over your knee frustration, but you guys have seen it. You know, a slam the bat down, unhappy about some calls on the corners of the strike zone. And I think it's in his head a little bit. He knows he's not doing what everybody expected him to do. He knows he's hitting the ball on the ground too much. And sometimes he's a little over anxious, and sometimes he's a little too patient. And I think he's a little in between right now. And to be honest with you, I think he needs an off season to, you know, figure it out, go get in shape, you know, take some ground balls and come to next year with a clean slate, and maybe he takes off next year. He can obviously be good this year, but he doesn't look like the guy that I thought we were going to see, you know, based on what we'd heard about him in the minors.
Well, it looks like that offseason will not begin Sunday. At least they'll have one little series to deal with, and we'll see where they go from here.
Yeah.
Mr. Shulman, always a pleasure. We'll be watching tonight. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, there's pizza in the Tim and Sid booth right now, so I got to go.
What?
Damn it.
I'm coming, Dan.
Showman! Showman!
I'll be down in 10 minutes.
Dan and Buck!
If that's like a violation of the protocols, I was totally joking, but I got to go.
Bring a mask. Bring a mask.
Goodbye, Dan. Just spiking footballs left and right. Dan Showman. In our home. They're eating pizza where we live, McAuliffe, the Tim and Sid Studios.
What kind of pizza before I go?
I don't know. And as long as it doesn't have pineapple on it, I'll eat it. Coming up next, Harn Narayan Singh of Hockey Night in Punjabi will join us. He's got a new book out. Right. Stay for that. Harn Narayan's a good young man. We're going to talk to Harn Narayan next from Chestermere, Alberta. But 6 kilometers outside of Calgary. I just knew that. I'm like Ron McLean. I just know the country like the back of my hand. Harn Narayan next. Tim and Sid live on TV and radio.
What's the junior team there? Never mind.
You know.
Still to come on this edition of Tim and Sid, Rich Gannon, former NFL MVP on another MVP. Is Drew Brees actually done? We'll discuss with a former NFL quarterback coming up in a flash.
Harn Narayan Singh of Hockey Night Punjabi is now joining us from the aforementioned Chestermere, Alberta. He's got a book out, a real book. I know Ken Reed has a book out too today, but I'll talk about your book, Harn Narayan. We'll get to that in a second. But welcome to the show. Let's talk a little Stanley Cup final off the front, because you've probably forgotten more about the Stars than most people know at this stage, considering you were out there covering that arena for as long as you were. What did you make of last night? This feels like a solid 6 games at least for the Cup final.
Right. Yeah, I totally hear you on that, because after game one, my color commentator was kind of getting worried and thinking that Dallas might have the upper hand, and mentioned Harpreet Pandair, and he on the air on a post game mentioned potential sweep. I didn't agree with that, but you saw how Tampa Bay dominated in that first period, and Dallas came back. The interesting thing is, I don't think it's a case of Hudobin, having issues, though. I think he was still really solid, and Dallas has that really going for them. And it's going to be a great series, because Tampa Bay is really beefed up with getting guys like Blake Coleman and Pat Maroon. And so they're not just all offense. They can play the style of game that Dallas likes to play. So it's going to be a great series, a great finish here.
It's not just Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi edition. You also did a lot of work for the NHL and Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. I have to ask you, what's it like being in an empty building for the Stanley Cup playoffs when we're normally used to having, like, especially in Edmonton, raucous crowds just absolutely shaking the joint, and then doing your ringside interviews through what we're doing right now, basically a Skype from the top of the building down to the bottom?
Well, first and foremost, it's pretty eerie. And, I was there with Louis DeBrusque and Chris Cuthbert quite a bit, and it was as if the game was being played just for us. So it was very different. I think once the puck drops, because when you're at an actual game with fans, while the play is going on, it's actually fairly quiet. And the players have done a great job playing with intensity anyhow. So the interview thing was kind of funny, because there's times where, the player would show up and I might not have seen them in my monitor yet. And they're like, hello, is anybody there? And then we had some funny false starts and things like that. But it was actually it was more of a controlled environment. It was very chilled. So you could almost be relaxed with the players and have more banter with them beforehand. But I would say that it's absolutely remarkable that they were able to pull this off with such few people in the building. In comparison to a live game pre-COVID, the amount of robotic cameras and just, I was like, you're alone. You're trying to navigate the arena all alone, and it's just completely different. So a much more chill environment.
Harn Narayan Singh here on Tim and Sid. Let's get to your book here, because it's not every day you write one, and it's always a special day. And you've been doing a bunch of press all day. Just so people know, when you put out a book, you do like 3 straight days of press, and it's highly exhausting, and you get a lot of stupid questions. So hopefully, Harn Narayan, we won't ask you the stupid questions today. One Game at a Time is the title. My Journey from Small Town Alberta to Hockey's Biggest Stage. Again, author is Harn Narayan Singh. How long has this been in the works? I know 2020 has been weird. When was it supposed to come out compared to today? And what is the message here? What are you hoping people take away from it?
Well, as you know, everything is completely different in the world right now. And we started this process several years ago. So this was before Bill Peters, or before the Don Cherry incident, before George Floyd. And we had to, you know, try to come back to it as many times as we could to address some of these issues. But with books, it's such a long-term project that the manuscript for books is like 6 to 8, maybe sometimes even 12 months in advance, where you put in the manuscript and then it comes out so down the road. So, but we, you know, the message for this book, if I would like to say to people out there that if a person like myself who, you know, when you grow up, the question you're often asked is, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, I want to be a hockey commentator, and people laughed. And I was often discouraged from trying this. And, you know, my message would be, if a person like myself can make it, if we have Hockey Night Punjabi and all of my colleagues doing such a great job and proving the worth of having multicultural, you know, different aspects of the sport and helping grow the game and representation, my message is that if I can do it, anybody can do it. And we live in a country where hockey is so important, and we live in a country where we have these opportunities. I'll tell you guys, you're talking about Chestermere, Alberta, Brooks, Alberta, where I grew up. Had it not been for hockey, my experience growing up as a Canadian kid would have been completely different. And hockey's what broke the barriers for me. It allowed me to create friendships. And, you know, I became the kid who was obsessed with the sport and wore hockey jerseys to school and ate a lot of ProStar cereal. So, you know, I want to give back to the game, and this is a way of doing that. And you know, I never thought I would write a book, but the publishers came and asked me and convinced me that it was a positive message of diversity through the lens of sports and through the lens of a broadcaster.
Funny, because we've had a lot of these conversations, obviously, over the last few months. And I think back to me growing up in Toronto and the area that I did. And there isn't a lot of places where you see a bunch of alpha 16-year-old boys holding hands with people of different faiths, people of different backgrounds, like playing football and standing in a huddle where you hold hands with, like, I don't know where else you get those bonding moments. Then there aren't a lot of places where you get those bonding moments outside of sports. So for you, retracing those steps, as I have, looking back at my past, was it cathartic? Was it sad? Was it all of those things? Like, was it happy? Like, what came to you as you kind of put your story down on paper?
Well, it was truly an emotional roller coaster. And I talked to Kelly Rudy about this, who's been one of my mentors in the industry for a long time. And he had the same experience when he wrote his book, that you're reflecting on your journey. And there's so many things I've touched on in this book, guys, that my own family, my parents, my sister, they read it and said, why didn't you tell us this happened to you when you were growing up, this bullying you experienced? Like, you know, we could have helped you. We could have done something. And I had to reflect on those moments. But then there was also joy in reflecting on the moments of obsessing with Gretzky and, you know, figuring out a way to get the cable TV running in my 13-inch Nintendo monitor in my room that my dad didn't know, because he told me to go to sleep, but it was in, like, you know, triple or quadruple overtime. And so I had to, like, figure out how to get a cable wire from the living room to my bedroom, which was at the other end of the house. And, you know, just a lot of kind of really cool memories like that as well, about how my love for the game grew and the support I received from my family. Like, my parents and my sister Gurdeep, had they not given me the encouragement, because I was getting discouraged from the outside world, from professionals. Even when I went to broadcast school, it was like, and I don't blame these people, because it was a cautionary tale. They were trying to look out for me, but they said, maybe you should try behind the scenes producing. Maybe that's up your alley. Or maybe if you would have a shot at on the air, it would maybe be news, but definitely not sports. And those were the comments I was getting continually. But my parents said, go for it and let's see what happens. My sister Gurdeep, she helped me, went far and beyond. And then my wife Suki, we get to talk about it in the book. We had a totally hockey themed wedding with a life-size Stanley Cup cake, and I'm seeing it all come to fruition with my kids now. And so the whole thing's in there, but, you know, there's a lot of fun stories, but there's a serious element as well that I believe we need to talk about in today's day and age.
Harden Ryan, time is not our friend. We got to go. We're all getting cut off here. Harden Ryan saying, you are a gentleman. It's always great to have you on, and all the best. Thank you, sir.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
There is Harden Ryan saying.
The book available now. No, it's all good, Timmy. The book is available now. Harden Ryan is a great guy. Support him. Coming up next, Rich Gannon, some NFL talk and some hockey talk next. This is Tim and Sid, TV and radio.
Time for Tim and Sid. It's time for real sports talk with Tim McAuliffe and Sid Sexero.
Muchas gracias, sheepdogs. Another busy day, NBA on the schedule. Western Conference Final, game number 3 between the Lakers and the Nuggets. We'll see if Denver can do it again. Stanley Cup Finals, or Stanley Cup Final, has the night off tonight. It is the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup Final.
Correct.
And
John
every
Shannon's
year, I
get
need
mad
to
at you. You screw that up. Don't get John Shannon
I
mad
need
at
to
you.
Remind myself. No, I don't want to get John Shannon pissed off.
No.
One of the original Tim and Citizens. We do not want to do that. In fact, he made T-shirts, and I can't disrespect the man by saying Stanley Cup Finals. It is the Stanley Cup Final, and it has the night off. But last night, we had not only a pretty damn good game, but we also had the NHL awards handed out. Anything surprise you, the NHL awards?
A couple things. I didn't know how they would actually produce it. I didn't hate it, you know, to have Wayne Gretzky say you're the Hart Trophy winner is pretty damn cool,
yeah.
Right? To have Paul Coffey say you won the Norris, it's pretty damn. I was very happy with how subtle it was. It was subdued. It had to be, but the guys were given their moment, which I thought was really cool. So I did. Don't get me wrong. I do want the hokiness of the produced show from years gone by. I kind of miss it this year. I do kind of miss it this year because you could pick away at it and it's fun. But this year I was happy with the production. I was fine with it. There were two writers that didn't have Nathan MacKinnon in their top five for Hart Trophy. Now look, there's a lot of criticism flying around. I know Maria Taylor of ESPN's taken some heat for leaving Anthony Davis off the top two all NBA teams. It was an honest mistake on her end, and she said as much. But what happened with Nathan MacKinnon didn't sound like it was an honest mistake. It's two guys who actually thought about it. And I think we need to cut this list dramatically when you see stuff like that. I'm not a fan of, well, pull their vote because they, you know, Derek Jeter wasn't unanimous in the Hall of Fame or this. I don't do that often. But there are just moments where, if you're dealing with the Professional Hockey Writers Association, there are people that should have a vote, and there's people that shouldn't have a vote. I think too many people have votes. If Nathan MacKinnon can't make top five for the Hart, too many people have votes.
Yeah,
too many. That's my opinion. It's not the biggest issue in hockey right now. I understand it, but it really pissed me off. It really pissed me off, and because it just.
But there's so many people that won't take it seriously.
But that's my issue. If you're not going to take the vote seriously, that's fine. Hand it back. There are plenty of people around North America, and this isn't just a Canada thing, around North America that would love a chance to pipe in on this discussion, a pretty serious one. MVP in any league means something. It means a ton. I thought it was lazy. I thought it was disrespectful to the process. And I'm not saying MacKinnon should have won. That's not what I'm saying. Congratulations to Leon Draisaitl. But for the love of God, he's not in your top five? If you don't know hockey, you can't vote on the Hart. I'm sorry. You can't.
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of someone asking me to hand out Engineer of the Year in Ontario. I'm not there. I don't know enough to give that award out, so maybe I should pass on it. And let's be honest, there are some writers in the United States, they're getting hockey as their beat. Why? Because they're new. Right? They're not, they need to work a little bit. There's some markets where that's how it works. And that's the end result.
Yeah,
lazy. Even, absolutely lazy, and it annoyed me to no end.
You know how you end that, right?
Help me, please. How do you end it?
You make the vote public. Then you got to live. You have to put your name on what you voted. And like Maria Taylor, who says, I made a mistake.
Yeah.
Move on, because she's going to be a massively huge star in the United States of America, and everyone can see it. But whoever puts their name on Nathan MacKinnon not being a top five player in the NHL, think about what you'd be hearing today.
Well, they were exposed eventually. I don't know if they willingly put their names on it. But my issue, my only issue with that is then you get guys who also want to be trending for the 2 hours after the vote.
Oh, right.
And just do it for the hell of it.
Not for
They're that. Out there. I've seen less petty stuff than that. So I thought it was ridiculous. Take away the vote. If you don't care about the vote, that's fine. Take it away.
Sometimes I hate when we talk about things because you're lending credence to the idea that this needs, like,
I didn't mention any names. Yeah. I didn't mention any names specifically.
I don't even know who the names are. I didn't even know that the names were out.
Not saying them. I'm just saying it happened, and it was pathetic. Timmy, switching gears quickly here to football, because Rich Gannon is joining us momentarily. Speaking of criticism.
All right.
It's not like Drew Brees and the Saints got blown out last night in Vegas, right? Vegas getting their first win at home. Derek Carr in that offense. It was a surprising result. Derek Carr in that offense looks tasty. Like, they can do a lot of things to you. But Drew Brees was a bit of a talking point here after the game, and he was taking a lot of heat. Do you think it was deserved, considering what the final score was last night?
You get outplayed by Derek Carr, you're probably going to hear it a little bit.
Yeah,
and
I would agree.
For those who missed it, Carr threw for 282 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Brees still moved and made throws. He threw for 312 yards. He had 1 touchdown, 1 interception. The key here is that Drew Brees is almost 42 years of age, right? And he missed Michael Thomas for sure. I've chronicled in the past that you never know when the descent is coming with quarterbacks. It just, even for the great ones, it just happens. Like, Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl in his final year at the age of 39, but he went from leading the league in everything. He was 55 touchdowns, 10 interceptions in 2013. And in 2015, he had 9 touchdowns and 17 picks. Brett Favre went from 12-4 with 33 touchdowns and 7 picks at the age of 40 with the Vikings to 11 touchdowns, 19 picks, and he was 5-8 at the age of 41, 1 year later. What I'm telling you is, with the greatest quarterbacks of all time, you never see it coming. It just happens. Joe Montana got hurt, ended up going to KC, and was never the same quarterback that he was in San Francisco. I'm not saying that that's Drew Brees, but I'm going to tell you right now, you're not going to see it coming. And when Las Vegas is the one converting 10 of 17 third downs and going for it twice and fourth down, and successfully converting those, that's supposed to be the Drew Brees team, not the Derek Carr team.
But like you said, Michael Thomas missing that game. And in the post game, for those who missed it, Brees was wearing a shirt 149, which was the record catch total Michael Thomas had last season. So to say that he misses his Michael Thomas, and a lot of fantasy owners did, is a huge understatement. So I hear you there. Tim, I'm of the opinion there's only one Tom Brady here. And the fall from grace from some of these guys is going to be swift and ugly. I'm not saying Brees is there yet. They're 1-1. That's a pretty good defense. I think they can find their way here for a few weeks until Michael Thomas comes back. So not all is lost in New Orleans. But the fact that he has some of the lowest totals in terms of air under his passes through 2 weeks they've seen in years, I think that's significant. This guy's not bombing him anymore.
Yeah.
And when you're 42, that's an issue. I don't know how you find that. And not to say anything about the offseason that Drew Brees had, which I'm sure was emotionally taxing and completely self-inflicted. But this is going to be a very interesting test of Drew Brees. Things aren't going perfectly. And We'll see where it goes from here, but I would not be shocked if this is the narrative with Brees as we go along for the rest of the season. Is he declining? How much is he declining? Things of that ilk.
The number that Sid's talking about, Brees 4.82 air yards per pass this season, lowest by any NFL quarterback through two games since Brett Favre in 2009. And it'd be great to speak to Rich Gannon. We are attempting to get a hold of Rich Gannon right now as we speak to talk about things like this. But I would guess in 2009, by the way, was his 33 touchdown 7 interception year for Brett Favre. So he ended up having a pretty good year despite that number. But then the precipitous fall came right after it. So it'll be interesting to watch. And there is absolutely no doubt that having one of the greatest receivers in the game out means something. I mean, just ask Deshaun Watson. Just ask Kyler Murray and Deshaun Watson. The difference between the two there and what you're seeing in Texas and what you're seeing in Arizona, I believe, has a direct correlation to DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. DeAndre Hopkins looks at home. Kyler Murray looks like he really likes DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, right away, the organization paid the man. Matter of respect. Right. I believe he negotiated his own contract on top of that. It was a really interesting story. So those things matter. So we'll keep an eye on that Breeze story. That Breeze story isn't going away. One last football note, Tim. I got a couple of NBA things here on the table. I'm going to pitch to you momentarily.
Some breaking news in the NBA.
Oh, yeah, there is the other story. I was talking about two others. I forgot about the coaching news that just broke. Yeah. Derek Carr. Let's remember, Derek Carr for a stretch of 3 years, ending in 2017, was a Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
Derek Carr at times in this league has been damn good.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You give him Josh Jacobs in the backfield, and for those who caught a bit of it last night, you know what I'm talking about. It didn't matter what happened. Derek Carr had an option. Either you run it with Jacobs, Waller at tight end looks like the real deal. He was fantastic. Henry Ruggs can go over the top of any safety or corner in this league. I don't care who it is. He has that kind of speed. You know, I don't know if he makes the catch every time, but he's got that kind of speed. Yeah. That offense can do anything. And now Carr has all these tools around him in a year where everyone thought Marcus Mariota was going to come in and take his gig. He looks really determined, Tim, is my point. He looks extremely determined. And I think you saw a bit of that last night. He looked very steady. He keeps playing like that. He doesn't lose him games. The Raiders are going to be no joke, man.
Hold on.
No joke.
Hold on. Would you like to know their schedule before you say that?
Actually, I would. I don't know their schedule.
Here's the next couple games for the Las Vegas Raiders. They get New England, Buffalo, KC, then Tampa. Like, we're
They're
about
lose
to find
four
out.
Straight. They're going to lose four straight, is what you're saying.
We're about to find out how good straight. They are. Yeah.
They
yeah.
could.
Good
they
start. Could. I like it. 2-0. You're among the more surprising 2-0 teams, but New England, Buffalo, KC, Tampa, your next four games in succession. So
that's an interesting schedule. I wasn't aware of that. I was not aware of that at all.
Well, that's what I'm here for. I'm here for that, 6-0.
I'm
here for you. I'm here for the stats. I'm here for the numbers. I'm here for the facts. The one thing I don't want to get into is a debate over masks, because I believe in the science. I wear a mask wherever I go when I cannot socially distance. Is there a little hypocrisy from the NFL in having these guys go out and play games and allowing fans in the stands and then fining their head coaches if the mask is worn down or low $100,000? Because Pete Carroll, Kyle Shanahan, Vic Fangio, all fine $100,000.
I think there's more to come too, because Sean Payton John wasn't Gruden. Wearing one at times last night. John Gruden wasn't. John Gruden, he revealed to us he had COVID, he told us last night at the end of his press conference, and then left. There was no follow-up question. He just walked off. Everyone was like, really? You had COVID? Yeah. So the fines might not be over, Tim. To answer your question, it's a huge hypocrisy, because, I mean, go back to the first Thursday in Kansas City. How many people not wearing masks did you see in that crowd booing a protest?
Yeah.
Right? You saw a lot. So now I understand the coaches are on TV more than most, but it is ridiculous to fine them $100,000. The team gets fined $250,000. Really? When you got players running around, it makes no sense. It makes absolutely
Gruden
no sense.
Gruden can afford it. I just sometimes
they can all afford it. It's just. But it's the message. But your point is, if you got people in the stands not doing it, if you got players out there, linemen and defensive tackles in each other's face like every snap, like what's the point? Sorry, not to put words in your mouth, but I believe that was your point.
You step on the field and there's no COVID there, but you step onto the sidelines. And I know you're trying to make a point. You're trying to pass on the importance of masking up for the world to see. I think people sometimes see through the BS when you act like if you step on the sidelines, it's more dangerous than going on the field and smashing into each other's faces and saying that it's okay. I just wanted to point that out because I find it, listen, I'm not having a debate about masks. I'm not having a debate about science. I just, to me, sometimes when you treat people like idiots, they rebel a little bit.
Hold on, Tim. With that said, I believe if every society fined people $100,000 for not wearing a mask,
people would
wear masks.
Yeah.
The NFL might be onto something here, Tim. NFL might be onto something.
I do agree with that. Some breaking NBA news and some news surrounding the league as we head towards Game 3 of the Western Conference Final between the Denver Nuggets and the Los Angeles Lakers, which you can see on the Sportsnet family of channels. Should I get to the breaking news about the coaching ranks first? Because this, I mean, a little bit of a shock to many that Billy Donovan walked away from what was an overachieving OKC team this year and apparently has walked into one of the more inept organizations in the last few years in the Chicago Bulls. Adrian Wojnarowski tweeting out that Billy Donovan has agreed to a deal to become the next head coach of the Chicago Bulls. I'm shocked.
Strange. It's strange. I'll say this, though. It's a young team in Chicago. There's some talent there. There's reason to think that maybe it won't rise to the occasion, become a playoff contender in the next year or two. But I'd love to know what the money was on the deal, because a pairing that I really thought Billy Donovan could have sat back. Like, this guy, the success this guy's had in college, he just won Coach of the Year as voted by the coaches, not the Nick Nurse Award, but the other award.
Mm-hmm.
He's got this incredible reputation. Why run for this gig? I don't understand this. And it had to be, maybe you're bringing a guy, I don't know. Would Fred VanVleet play well with Billy Donovan? I don't know. I'm still on this Chicago's going to make a run at Fred VanVleet thing. I have nothing to back that up. But what else is here besides money for Billy Donovan? I don't quite understand it. I don't know what the long-term play is.
There's always the bleep you. Like, if they were playing hardball with Billy Donovan in OKC, and he knows an agent tells him you can get triple that somewhere else, then you just go get triple that somewhere else. Like, that's my only answer. Because what OKC did this year and what they have coming down the pipe thanks to the Paul George deal is five. I'm spitting all over the place today as we discuss masks.
Put on a mask. $100,000 fine.
Five first-round picks. It's okay, I'm in my basement. Five first-round picks to go with a team that is already overachieving. Like, I don't understand why he left unless it's just straight cash, homie.
Unless they're trading Chris Paul.
Or Thomas Satoransky.
And he was of the opinion, no. But at $40 million a year, you might have to trade Chris Paul. I don't know. I'm looking at the Bulls roster. I don't mind Zach LaVine. I like Lauri Markkanen. Like, I'm just, there's nothing here that would say to you, you got to go to Chicago.
No.
Nothing. God bless the roster. There's nothing here that says you got to do that now. Because the Nick job is going to open up in another year. Because that's what happens with that job. So if it's about money, just wait.
They paid
the man. I don't know. They had to pay the man. Let's get to the I'm going to get to the Adam Silver thing today, Timmy. The Bob Costas interview. So we don't know when this next NBA season is going to start. We don't know when the next NHL season is going to start. Gary Bettman and Bill Daly spoke Saturday. They're not sure when this is going to happen, but they're open to the idea of starting in arenas with no fans and gradually building from there, whenever that takes place. The one thing the NHL did tell us over the weekend, they're not going past July 22nd, the Japan Olympics. NBC cannot allow an NHL season to go later than that because there's no broadcast room for them. So that's what we heard from the NHL. Today, Adam Silver and Bob Costas were talking about that very issue, and Adam Silver is now looking at January at the earliest in terms of an NBA start time for the next coming season. I'm not really surprised by that, Timmy. I don't know if you're surprised by that. I don't know how much longer I can go in terms of waiting for seasons to start. You and I have had our fill of that between March and whatever it was. So you don't want to hear January, but I completely understand it. Are you surprised by that at all?
No, I think the one thing that we're learning from commissioners is while COVID forced them to do things in a safe manner, and I think the NBA and NHL went about it in a way that most people can be proud of, while it was tough on the players, they're still in Wu-Tang mode. Cash rules everything around them. And do not, like, you're watching it in the NFL and the NCAA right now. The NCAA, for all we knew it was, has hit a new level of greed by putting fans in stands on campuses where they won't allow you to vote, and they won't allow the students to come on campus, but they'll play football games and allow fans to pay good money to go see those football games. Like, the level of hypocrisy is so ridiculous right now that it's not funny, and it's all the almighty dollar. And just because the NBA has taken a high moral ground on a lot of this stuff doesn't mean that their owners are willing to turn down money. And if you can tell them that if they wait longer, they may have a better chance of getting more people to pay more money to go see their games, I'm not shocked by any of this, because I'm watching it happen in the NFL and the NCAA right bleeping now. Notre Dame's not playing this weekend.
Wake Forest game postponed, correct. I believe 7 positive COVID tests on the Notre Dame side of things. 7.
Is it 7 now?
I believe
it's
7.
I read 4 earlier.
Right. I hope it's not 7, but I thought I read 7.
Right.
Tim, quickly, one more caveat to the NCAA. I'm also reading today. I mean, we know usually the preseason tournaments in NCAA basketball is around November, American Thanksgiving in December and whatnot, Maui Invitational, blah, blah, blah. I'm reading today all of them could be in a bubble in Orlando. Last time I checked, these aren't professionals. So you're making them go to a bubble in Orlando so ESPN can get their games, which people just basically bet on? Like, that's the purpose of them early in a season? Like, that blew my mind. But I think the other thing that's really becoming apparent.
But stop it. Like, you and I both know what's going on.
No, we do. But, like, to tell kids you have to quarantine during American Thanksgiving is a whole nother step to me. Like, that's playing football. The Big Ten going back on their decision for safety reasons is the least surprising story of 2020. And the Pac-10 on Thursday are going to do the exact same thing. They're going to set a schedule for a season that they wanted to postpone, but public pressure and private financial pressure mean they're coming back. But to actually quarantine kids for the sake of ESPN's contract blows my mind. It kind of blows my mind a little bit. It's all about money. I'm aware of that. But that one kind of surprised me. That one surprised me.
I don't like. I'm at the point, and correct me, listeners, viewers, and obviously we haven't caught up with Rich Gannon, so we'll have to Matt Damon, Rich Gannon, who is one of our favorites. But, like, correct me if I'm wrong. If you have followed the NCAA in any of its steps over the last little while, we're not surprised by any of this. We're not surprised that there was 25,000 people watching the Dallas Cowboys play. Right? Like, I am less and less shocked by any of this, and if the NCAA doesn't come out the other side paying the athletes after this, that is the greatest run organization in the history of time.
And that scam's not going to end. I know people think it's going to end. No, 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 no. You have no idea how deep the corruption goes and how deep those TV contracts go. Like, if you're looking for kumbaya moments for NCAA athletes, don't hold your breath.
Like, we're not talking about millions of dollars. We're literally talking about billions of dollars to unpaid athletes.
Correct.
Nothing shocks.
And the billions at stake, Tim, for the NHL and NBA, the feeling you get over the last 48 hours, 72 hours listening to both commissioners, this bubble's not happening again. They don't want it, and the players don't want it.
Yeah, that's
they need revenue in the stands eventually. So say goodbye to the bubble is the feeling I'm getting, and I'm fine with that.
That does it for us. doesn't mean there isn't sports to be watched, kids. Oh, no. Blue Jays, second of a four-game series with the Yankees tonight. Can Big Al continue to hit dingers? We will check it out. Western Conference Final, Nuggets and Lakers. Can Denver do it again? It's just fun. Enjoy it all, everybody. We will talk to you again tomorrow. Thanks for watching and listening to this edition of Tim and Sid from the Basement.